If anyone needs a shake, so please make sure everyone's up. We're going to have a lesson about the resistance, the objection to the wisdom of Kabbalah. Today we're going to try to give you a very practical tool for each and everyone who wishes to be able both to be sure about things you weren't sure about, and also to get a tool, an instrument for yourself to cope and to understand arguments that people say about the wisdom of Kabbalah in general and us in particular, and we don't really know what to do with it. Because what do we want to do? We want only good for the world. And I guess everyone stumbled upon this.
Of course, these complaints exist on the outside also with the external people. And we meet different audiences, give them service, and beginning with ourselves, and all the way to those who oppose us, object to us. And it's important that we have all the tools to deal with them. And even though, you know, you can say, "Oh, I heard it before," but this is according to Mushi, who's not here now, but prepared this very thorough presentation. We've been through all the groups around Israel, also points in the heart, and we gave these this content before, we learned about it, we improved it as we were going along. If we want to present to you in a very organized way the opposition to the wisdom of Kabbalah and the answers. We have to remember that, first of all, those are oppositions that exist in us, and later you see it outside. We'll do it in several stages. First, we'll talk about the struggle, the resistance to the wisdom of Kabbalah on a historic level. It's a short phase, but we'll just put some order. Then we'll talk about the reason for the opposition in the wisdom of Kabbalah, and ultimately why people oppose us. People have complaints against us, and what can you say to that? We'd like to open with a workshop, and we're going to ask our beloved friends and everyone who sees us in the world to answer a question. Speak of cases of opposition and objections that you've met with, and how did you react to them? Could be something we heard in the family, or with beginners, or could be objections or positions that we ourselves had. Doesn't matter. Various cases of resistance or opposition to the wisdom and how we reacted to them.
Well, I stumbled in the campus that people call Kabbalah as a new Torah, meaning you have a new kind of religion, you have your approach. In the family, they think we're a small sect that has its own way of life with a closed community. And out in the street, of course, you hear everyone, if you start talking to people outside, that what they think is mysticism or something you're not supposed to talk about. It's forbidden.
Yeah, I met with various people talking down at this or in the family, and the first reaction is it's not clear why it's so, and then you understand there's a natural reaction in a person, and you have to accept it as part of process.
I remember I stumbled upon objections when I was handing out newspapers or flyers to the campus, and people were resisting all kinds of phenomena in this world, mysticism or religion, but actually people feel our attitude when disseminating. If we have a warm attitude, it melts down the objection rejection, because people feel it, and they feel it's not what they thought about it.
I faced such cases where people thought we're making people religious, Orthodox. How did that react? I said, we're not. And over time, in my family, over time, it became clear to them.
All kinds of objections, but I think what I'll talk about is what I had in my family in the beginning. Everything, whatever they saw that's related to us or to the wisdom of Kabbalah, they only saw the bad things about it. My words didn't help, my explanations didn't help. What did help with time, when they started knowing this society and seeing us, how it changes us and how it causes us to come closer to them, to get to know people who heard about it, who were not related to us directly, that really helped. Being those external circles softened the resistance that was in my family.
In my family, there were always objections, mainly people who were kind of looking down at, you know, what does the Kabbalist say about A, B, and C? But today, with time, these objections kind of fell by the wayside. They understand that I'm in my own kind of doing my own thing. They feel there's truth in there. It disappears. Disappeared for the most part. Sometimes someone kind of raises his head, but he gets back on his head.
Yeah, I also got a lot of resistance, especially from my closest friends and my family. And of course, the closest ones to you are the ones who object in the strongest way for your positive change. And one of the arguments I heard is that I joined a sect. And when I heard that, I always said that if my sect is a sect that brings humanity to love thy friend as yourself, well, I'll be happy to join such a sect. And the one who answered all these objections in the nicest way was my wife, because it's hard for people to hear these arguments from someone who's close to them. And she said, listen, everyone has his own sect, and everyone has the things you attach to, you invest in, and that's your world. This is our world. Nothing wrong about it. The moment you say it out loud and everyone understands that all you do here is try to promote the Israeli society and the whole society in the world to a place of love. So,
can you please show the first quote? Exactly. The Tower of Babylon. 3,800 years ago, humanity, and this is really the first leap in the ego that humanity is experiencing. Up until then, the whole land was one language and few things, and people were like one family. But then, the Tower of Babylon, we learned about it today quite a bit, about the first real appearance of the ego.
Next slide, please. And Nimrod. Nimrod was a symbol for the first leap of the ego. Until his time, all the people were equal, is written, and no one tried to rule his friend. Nimrod, he started overcoming and ruling the land. That's a sign for what happened then and what happens today. Every time anew, we see that when we unite and we achieve something, the ego immediately jumps up and you start separating. And that was the first time it was written that happened. Next.
This is Maimonides. He's saying, love thy friend as yourself. All the things you wish others would do to you, do them to your brothers. This is that law, not the law of love thy friend as thyself. And it's very interesting that you take that thing and you turn that into a foundation for objection. This whole love thy friend as yourself. I remember a conversation I had with a Lithuanian Hasid, you know, follower, very devout, and we spoke, and he looked at me very suspiciously, and we talked. What are we talking about? Love of Israel, love thy friend as yourself. Then he told me, he said this line to me that I will never forget. That's what made me understand that without the upper force, there's no way to reach the correction. He said to me, love of Israel can never come at the expense of the Torah of Israel. How do you take that thing and you separate the love of Israel and the Torah of Israel? This is maybe the basis for understanding the objection that exists in everyone towards anyone who comes and says it's the same thing, the internality of things and that inner force that exists beyond that external book, if you wish.
Yeah, and the symbol for the love of Israel is Abraham, that actually he stood up in the times of Nimrod. He stood up and he said, it is said that he gave the people food and drinks without anything in reward. What he said was unfounded love should exist instead of unfounded hatred, that unity and connection should exist instead of the separation that Nimrod brought. Next slide. Okay, we're going to jump one more slide. We'll make this process shorter. We heard about the destruction of the first temple and what Kabbalists say that from here started the destruction of the first temple. They wanted the virtues of richness and force to become stronger than justice, as all the other nations. And because the Torah forbidden that, they denied the Torah and the prophecy, and they started behaving like the neighbors, so that they can enjoy life and the egoism. And because they did that, all this, the forces of this nation disintegrated until the destruction occurred. Also, in the second temple, there was a struggle of ideology. Balas Sulam said that the beginning of the separation was emphasized there by students who were wrong with their approach. And their leaders were Tzedok and Baitus because they didn't want to stop with their egoism. So they made communities of the worst kind. And there was a big sect called Tzedokim. There were the richer people there, the officers. They were chasing egoism and lusts. It wasn't the way of the Torah. They fought the Pushim, and they brought the Romans to rule over Israel until this temple was destructed. And there's also a document, a historical document, that there were such struggles among Israel. There was a civil war, and people actually murdered each other, and the practical struggle between the different sects in Israel was so strong that the internal destruction allowed the Romans to just walk into Jerusalem. They didn't have to conquer it. And that's what we're so afraid of. It can happen in our days, too, because history repeats itself, as we know and we hear.
Yeah, this force of Abraham that appears on the against it, the force of Nimrod, how this whole thing kept evolving and assumed different forms till this day. So if you want to understand, we're talking about two forces, a force of internality of Torah, the force of correction, compared to all the other forces that don't speak of something else. They also work seemingly in the name of the Torah, for the sake of the Torah, but from a different place, from a place of the ego, not the place of correction.
Yep. Even we can even see it throughout history. Rambam Maimonides, who lived in 1138 till 1204. They boycotted his books because he dared write about Kabbalah. In 1570, Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, the Ramak, one of the greatest Kabbalists, sadly says that the opposers of Kabbalah try to punish anyone who engages in this. And it's an internal resistance for this main part of the Torah, the love thy friend as yourself. And it sounds as if it resists these things that we think are more important.
1730, 18th century, the Ramchal had to swear before the rabbis of Venice to not engage in the wisdom of Kabbalah. His manuscripts are taken into custody and some of them are burnt. Yes, Jews are burning books of Kabbalah, not just books of Kabbalah, and other books as well. But we have to understand, maybe today some of us are perplexed at the level of resistance we are facing, but if you look at what Kabbalists had to go through over the generations, look at what's happening here. It's not people like, you know, Chanoch Milvitsky, who is he, who's his dad? It's not some great in the Torah. Mark, Ramchal, it's people whose books are burnt.
Yes, Baal Shem Tov, who founded the Hasidism, and we know the principles of this movement. They tried to disseminate the wisdom of Kabbalah, and we know he was talking about the principles we're talking about now. What happened later with this movement happened, but in 1772, it's not so long ago. We're not talking about 3,000 years ago. It's 300 years ago. It's not so much. In Vilnius, the Jews started fighting against the Baal Shem Tov's movement because they wanted to disseminate Kabbalah to all the public. It's not so long ago. And in the past few weeks, we found something that was published, a clarion in the newspaper. This is how the mitnagdim, the opposers, fought the Hasidism. So this call is specifying their fear and everything that engaged in the Hasidism.
Everyone is clear about this topic of the Hasidic movement and the opposers, objectionists?
No.
The Hasidic movement has very different characteristics than the more stern Lithuanian approach. One of the central themes, and this of course has to do with the wisdom of Kabbalah, is the place of the Rav, or the Tzaddik, the righteous in the Hasidic movement. According to the Lithuanian movement, there is no mediator between man and the Creator. There shouldn't be someone in the middle. This whole idea of the degrees of the upper one, lower one, upper one, upper is upper. With respect to the Lithuanians, it's a heresy. So having a Rav, having a Chassid, a devotee, as great as he may be, that the students, the disciples adhere to in order to try to reach the Creator, this is heresy according to Lithuanians. That Lithuanian that I spoke to told me that Hasidic movement is the closest thing to the Judaism that we have today. And those are not just kind of superficial words. Rather, they will not allow for people to get married in the same place or allow people to pray in the same place. They detest one another more than they detest us or anyone else for that matter. So this struggle between the Orthodox Lithuanian Jews and the Hasidic Jews was a very vicious struggle that included including boycotting and violence.
One more principal thing, Baal Shem Tov founded, and Baal Salam writes about it, comparing to the Ari. You know this parable about the drowning man? The Ari would catch him by the hair. Baal Shem Tov, he caught in his heart and took him out of the water. So Baal Shem Tov was talking about disseminating the wisdom of Kabbalah out in the open. He was talking about this principle that Ari continued, that it's about time to disseminate the wisdom of Kabbalah. And that's the main resistance of what we call those who resist, the opposers. And this is what they were so afraid of. It's not that they didn't have Kabbalists. They did have a Kabbalist, but they opposed it. They thought it's not time yet. But Baal Shem Tov said, it's about time. And we have to teach everyone. And that's what happened. His Torah was spread out. And there were a lot of resistance to that.
Rav Kook, you heard about him, right? So, 20th century. Not a long time ago, 1920, there was a clarion by the Orthodox movement that prohibited the printing of one of his books. Rav Kook,
Baal HaSulam, 1933, publishes letters to disseminate Kabbalah for everyone. You almost call it the Kabbalah Lam, and religious Orthodox factors stop the publishing, not to the newspaper Auma, they stopped its publishing. And also in our times, 1983, Rabash brings dozens of secular students to Bnei Brak, and Rabash gets threats and resistance to that. We heard about it. So this is all the history of the resistance of Kabbalah, and we see there are forces acting throughout the last 4,000 years. Nothing has changed today too. People, whether they understand or don't understand the internality, the objection has strong roots.
What does it give me? Let's have a workshop on it. What does it give me, this information that I got now? This whole story, also myself, to some extent, is part of the same struggle going on for years. What does it do to me? How does it obligate me, if at all? Maybe it does nothing to me. Let's talk about it in the workshop.
What does it do? Yeah, what does it do? First of all, it awakens you from the inside. How much you're so small and low compared to the Kabbalists, how much we're not doing enough. We have easier and more comfortable conditions, but we don't give enough strength and effort. We have to invest much more. On the other hand, it also shows you how important these Kabbalists gave and how much we have to follow their way.
Yeah, it's reassuring to feel that we're part of that same path, or we yearn to be part of that path, and that the final decision is in the internality, beyond everything we're going to do on the outside.
It gives me a lot of impression to hear about the dedication of the Kabbalists throughout the ages that were ready to disregard themselves, but they were loyal to the dissemination of the wisdom of Kabbalah. With all the resistance they felt, they identified their Znamos besides them, and they did whatever they had to do without any account to themselves. Even they got disgraced and disrespected. Some of them physically were tortured, but as to them, the correction of the world is the most important thing. So it gives you a lot of greatness to get to know it deeply.
I was also impressed by the devotion, dedication of Kabbalists to go all the way. I hope that each one of us, and as a group, will be able to implement this dedication all the way in the things that the Creator is guiding.
Yeah, I was also impressed. It also puts emphasis on our conditions. Look how much better we have it compared to what the Kabbalists went through. It's also historically interesting to know this history, and also it gives you discernments about the internal resistances. It gives you some room for internal work.
Nothing more natural than objecting to the wisdom of Kabbalah. We have to accept it with understanding and keep moving towards the truth.
It's as if I myself, if it wasn't you talking about the greatness, I have to say that I didn't really relate to that. Maybe only the resistances about the past few years. What I got from it, the main thing is that it's not personal. It was always there, it always will be there. And us too, in our age, we have to understand what and how to do with it. Understand it's a natural force that exists in humanity for tens of thousands of years. It's probably here forever.
Okay.
Let's see the slide. The reasons for the objection to the engagement in the wisdom of Kabbalah.
There are many reasons for the resistance for the wisdom of Kabbalah. We put it into five different subjects. One of them is talking about how nature has two sides. The other is the internality and externality in the people of Israel. The third is about misunderstanding of the language of the branches, different approaches of the study and research, and the ones who leave this wisdom have their desire to justify themselves. We're going to specify about every reason here. We're sure you can add in the future. Yes?
Yeah, a position of nature. Can Judaism be realized without the changing of the inner qualities of men from reception to bestowal? Or specifically the inner change, the correction of the heart, is the main principle of Judaism. This rift can be defined as the struggle between Lishma and Lo Lishma. This is the work against nature. As those who do it for quite a few years, we understand this thing. But on the other hand, specifically because of our engagement in that, I think we can, and it's also correct and important to understand those who object us, who have everything set for them. They're told what to do, they know what is the reward they should be receiving, where they should be receiving it. A very organized kind of way. And suddenly this group of people come, it's not clear where they come from, what they're telling them. And what are we telling them if we think about it? And that's why the fact that we're not disseminating to religious people and Orthodox people, it's basically saying that that thing you've been doing in your whole life.
Yeah, what we're saying is that man's nature, man's relation to reality has to change in order to acquire new quality, something he does not have. And actually, to tell you the truth, we don't have the example to give them, because we ourselves research it all the time. We're going through processes, and we have a lot of doubts, a lot of questions. Well, we're not going to talk about all the internal resistances each and every one of us has, starting with the smallest doubt and till the biggest one. But still, we strengthen each other, we listen, we annul, and all kinds of concepts that we live them. That's our life. But if you're on the side and you're told if you do 1, 2, 3 you'll get heaven, and if you don't you get hell, it's much more simple for him. This thing of inverting your nature to the quality of bestowal, it's not clear, and it's what is clear is that you'll get the resistance for such a thing. Bala Sulam says, you should know that in Israel there's internality, which are the ones who serve the Creator in wholeness. There's externality, the ones who don't devote themselves to serving the Creator. And in the children of Israel, the ones who serve the Creator have internality, the ones who attain the internality of the Torah, and the externality, the ones who don't engage in the internal part of the Torah, only the external, the actions. Also, every man of Israel has internality, which we call Israel. Yeah, that's the point in the heart. The externality, which is what we call the nations of the world, which is the guf itself. But even the nations of the world we call them converts, because they are attached to the internality, they're like all the righteous people of the world who attach to Israel. We see even here, some people joined us, and then they left us, and they went to work and do the external work. And that's good for them. Meaning, there are these movements from the internality to the externality. We can understand why it happens.
Yeah, the language of the branches is the next topic. This misunderstanding about it. Baal Sulam says that the whole difficulty about the beginners is because they grasp things as corporeal expressions, bound by time and space and changes, that only the authors use them to give, to hint at signs, to symbolize the roots. So this Shulchan Aruch, the set table, person knows what he has to do every minute from the moment he wakes up till he goes to bed, and they get attached to that. Now you come and say there's an inner interpretation. No, that's for select few, for those who need it. The simple person on the street, this is what he has to do, it's written. The fact that there is a language of the branches and that there is an inner meaning, that in itself is unknown. So when you come and say, but it's written, look, this and this and this and that, it's written to keep the Sabbath, it's written to put on tefillin, a whole bunch of things. How do you want to advance without keeping it?
Well, for us too, when we teach it in the campuses or in the point of the heart, try to remember about yourself how long it took us to understand, and your students will also take the time to understand that the Torah and the writings are not about anything corporeal, nothing. It's only about things inside a person and the relationship between him and others. How many processes, how many blows, how many stages one should go through in order to start perceiving that this is the way it is, to accept it, not as something that the teacher says, rather as something that is real. And moreover, if you were educated, and actually everyone is educated to see it externally, even if a person, it seems to him that he is completely secular, he has his own opinion about these Torah and mitzvot. How many years you have to go through until this resistance softens? And so of course these are very substantial cause for the resistance to our whole approach, to everything we're talking about. And also there are other different approaches to the study of Kabbalah. You're told, okay, you teach one approach, there are others. Let's see what are the general approaches.
The academic interpretation of the wisdom, where is it even occur? Your friends, yeah. The academic interpretation. Who did the BA or a master's in Haifa? Good. You learned about how PhDs see the wisdom of Kabbalah? No. So, for example, I'll share with you. During one of the courses, with one of the doctors, ex-Chabad person who studied doctor, over a couple of lessons, he explained to us the Kabbalistic writings. He gave us a few quotes by Malchut that mates, and tried to explain to us that by that, the Kabbalists revolted against the sages because they used it to express unconventional intercourse, physical intercourse, and there was a tendency to kind of break all the norms and having sex in the family and everything. Well, you know, this is a doctor in the university. I don't know exactly where he took these ideas, but that's what he's teaching. Students come. We all came from here, so it didn't affect us. But understand that this is what they teach in the university about the wisdom of Kabbalah.
I didn't attend that course. But I was in a different one, or maybe it wasn't in that lesson, but I don't know. But I was in a different course where we learned that what was the wisdom of Kabbalah about? The Book of Zohar. The Book of Zohar was written in Provence, in Italy, in the 13th century, according to the views that they talk about there. It's a, kind of a story someone invented, probably Rabbi Moshe de Leon, because his wife was actually the one who published this book after he died. And there's no doubt that according to the language and the views that are described in the book and the different descriptions, it was written in the 12th or 13th century in Europe somewhere. So that's the academic approach. And by the way, Balasaram relates to this view in his articles, and he says that as to him, even if he knew that Rabbi Moshe de Leon himself wrote it, so he would consider him to be in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and even more, as in the degree of Moses. So that's the difference in the approaches.
Another interpretation is the religious one. I think there's no need to expand on it, elaborate on it.
We can expand a lot, but this is not the time. There's the esoteric mysticism about Kabbalah. You can open the radio on 103 in Israel FM, and you can find your mating according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, tarot, cards, astrology. You just add the word Kabbalah, and then you can sell things better. It becomes more practical, and more people believe it. And even though we disregard it, people, there's a need for it more than our dissemination.
In the gas station in the north, there's a book by the register, How to Choose a Name for Your Child According to the Wisdom of Kabbalah. And if you look in various local newspapers, there's a weekly column like astrology about the wisdom of Kabbalah, and it tells you various stories and amulets and all sorts of things, and there's not a shred of resistance to those things. In the same place, I remember one of the newsprints that at the time wrote about us something quite bad. There are two pages of slander against us. You turn the page and we have the weekly column by the Kabbalists. I don't remember who it was or she was, and they tell you various stories and it's all fine.
Yeah, and the last approach we're not going to specify about because we know it very well, because it's our approach, the practical interpretation, the work in the group. This work in the tens is what we are trying to implement through the wisdom of Kabbalah, not all the other ways we were talking about until now. So now we're going to discuss the reasons for the opposition people have, and also the people who were with us, started, tried, and left. And we know what we heard, that Bala Sulam said that because many students weren't accepted to the study, and the Kabbalists hid the wisdom of Kabbalah from the public, many charlatans came and they presented themselves as Kabbalists. Then they made their living from prophecies, making all these coins and different red strings, and these people buy that. And they're seemingly divine things. And this is what we were talking about, actually, before. So people have a desire to justify themselves. We said this joke about someone who wanted to be a pilot, and he couldn't. And then he was asked, where do you want to go? I'll go to anti-aircraft. And people asked him why. He said, if I'm not going to fly a plane, no one will. I always tell this joke. And why is it? Because there's something, there's truth in it. Rabash says that a person gets an awakening from above to reach a place where you work, knowing that you're about to reach or want to reach bestowal of contentment to the Creator. And a person is given a few awakenings, but if he doesn't make an effort to get the forces to reach it, then he gets some excuses and he must flee from this battle. Meaning he gets excuses why his way is correct, what he's taught is wrong. A person remains righteous always. Meaning, if he left the society, he's always right. By justifying oneself, he actually feels himself as a righteous. Chanoch can give us examples.
Yeah, there are many righteous people. But what characterizes them is that you feel that they truly believe it. And the people who work against us, especially those who were here, and you know some of them quite well, these people believe their own hype, truly, and I sometimes envy their inner drive. You see that there's something that kind of clothes in them, and they are certain, they're confident that they're on a mission from humanity to redeem us from this thing. And there's no logical explanation for it except for the upper force. There can't be such a thing. It's amazing to see such expressions.
Now we're going to have a workshop question. I think we can all wake up a bit more. I've seen everyone really up, and we're going to try to wake up some more. So the question is, why the way we learn the wisdom of Kabbalah is wrong? Let's try to understand the ones who resist us. So find one of the reasons we mentioned, and you should say why it's wrong to learn this wisdom. So go ahead.
להתלבש במתנגד. להיות מתנגד. למה לא טוב ללמוד? א',
why it's not good to study? Well, it takes up all your time. Why do you have to deal with all this nonsense? 2, why do you need this cult? And 3,
תעזוב אותך מהדברים האלה, לא יודע.
Forget about those things, I don't
know.
The customer is always right. A person always knows what. He doesn't need anyone. Everything's inside. And, in short, no matter how you see it, a person's always right.
Yeah, you have to wake up early every day and not be late. If you're late, people look at you funny. You don't have to do it every day. It's better to stay in bed, live well, have a good time, have vacations abroad, start a business, succeed, instead of investing your time in some abstract concept that no one knows what's the benefit of.
Enjoy life! Why are we here? Fooling ourselves. Even Rav says that there's nothing after this life, so let's start doing what we really were intended to do.
The way we study it is incorrect. It's hard for me to clothe in those who object. Let's put it this way. Because you say it's a science. Where is the science if you can't check the results or the test it? They say it's not mysticism about this reforming light. Nobody knows what is it. It's a thing that you can't check it. You can't feel it. We have to believe what Kabbalists are saying. In short, there's no nothing to hold on to, nothing to grasp. You can't really call this study scientific.
The
way you study the wisdom of Kabbalah, it's not clear. You're not checking anything. Where are you? What are you? There's this force How do you call this wind? Like a storm, like a hurricane that takes you and don't even know where you are. And this whole thing of the group and the connection, what's up with that? You can attain it in different places. And there's pressure. Short, it seems like it's not good what you study there.
I'm afraid to say it out loud. It's really easy. It's really easy to tell you why not to learn the wisdom of Kabbalah and our method. It's so easy. It goes against everything you want. What psychopath will go against his desire? That's not clear. What, are you a fool? Go enjoy yourself. Go to the beach. He didn't say the beach, but he said go enjoy yourself. In short, this way is against the I, against the self. And the mere fact, this mere fact is unacceptable. It is very easy to negate it, to throw it away to the garbage.
First of all, someone is brainwashing you. You're being brainwashed. It opposes free thinking, pluralism. They tell you what to do and what to think. And by some wizardry, they took control of your brain. But you look like normal, good people. And this wisdom of Kabbalah obligates a person to do illogical actions. You're constantly tired, unconcentrated. You wake up in the middle of the night for, I don't know for what. It's crazy. What about your family life? Women, children, where are you? How can a person, a normal person, who wants to, you know, you also pay a maaser, a tithing there, which is really, I mean, I don't understand this whole thing. It's a completely delusional. It's okay to have a hobby, but what is this nonsense? Crazy.
What I heard is that you learn the wisdom of Kabbalah in a practical way, in a group. And I don't understand why you have to join a group. There are other groups, better groups. What are these workshops?
It's not that you're learning just in a group. Someone is getting up in the morning, decided he's a Kabbalist, and he can tell you there's a Torah, there's a Bible, it's written for thousands of years, everyone studies that, always have, and suddenly, you guys, someone got up in the morning, decided he knows better, and decided it's better for him to teach this way, and you're following him.
I also heard you have a 10. You sit with people who you gotta love, and they're so different than you, so it's a difficult thing.
I think we need a round now to
Okay. Goes like this. First of all,
isn't this question brought?
Yeah, so now that we're all awakened in a good way, so let's say, each one will say shortly to his friends in the ten, what's the main benefit, the central benefit that you get, or the feeling you get, or whatever, that the wisdom of Kabbalah gives you. However, please do it rather than the ones who study Kabbalah, talking to the ones who study Kabbalah. Talk as if you're standing before people who do not know what the wisdom of Kabbalah. They only heard a little about it. Some of it you saw now, the resistance. So you're the representative of the wisdom of Kabbalah before a person who only knows about the objections to Kabbalah in a language that he can understand. What's my benefit? Not the general benefit. Rather, what my benefit for me, Chanoch, by learning the wisdom of Kabbalah. Go ahead.
The understanding, the laws, let's put it differently, it's a different viewpoint in order to accept everything that happens with greater understanding and confidence as part of general lawfulness. No, I met various PhDs in physics, but nothing explained to me the laws of this nature, like this wisdom.
Yeah, the wisdom of Kabbalah is talking about dissecting the rules of reality, the rules of nature, in a fundamental way, and there it has a very practical implications of developing a society. Kabbalists have explained the development of humanity and the different social regimes and the failure of our experiments until today. They explained, according to the rules of nature, what should be the steps and the operative actions to make a happy, fulfilled society. We can learn so much from them to implicate it and to see the actual results of it.
My life, what interested me was what's the meaning of my life and what was my purpose in this world, and really what's the point of this life if there's a beginning and an end. And since I remember myself, I was looking for answers for these questions, and here in the wisdom of Kabbalah, I understood, I'm beginning to understand, let's say after 20 years of studying, begin to understand the depth of creation of this line to do good to his creatures. The beautiful plan that's reserved for humanity, where we have to reach, that gives us the horizon, depth, the innermost happiness a person can feel, and it opens his eyes for the world, how pretty it can be, and it only depends on a person that he can, by his inner change, he can change the world. And the main thing is, I got to know myself through the wisdom of Kabbalah. Who am I? What am I? What is that big thought that brings us here, this big program that makes us, evolves us from lifetime to lifetime?
First of all, very precise. And the purpose is explained by this wisdom. In general, the entire universe, the process of evolution that occurs in front of our eyes and also not in front of our eyes. This wisdom gives you the ultimate answer or answers, especially in the gray area questions. Humanity doesn't know how to answer these questions, and instead of answers, it makes up all kinds of unlogical things like mysticism, religions, and different beliefs, and all kinds of things of uncertainty. In this wisdom, I really got answers that are on the spot, that gives you the perspective in the scale of the universe. It gives, and in general, it gave me personally, it let me understand who I am and what am I made of, how am I motivated to do things, what motivates me in each and every step of mine.
Okay, Shidur, can you bring up the next slide? No, the new religious movement or a cult?
There's a question, when people say sect, it really scares us, this word. So there's a slide about a new religion or a sect. Okay, so I'll explain. And everyone's always asking, Nebuch, it's a cult. It's a terrible thing. So first of of all, yes, being a cult is a terrible thing. It's not a compliment, it's a negative thing. So let's talk about this, understand what it means, a cult.
First of all, what characterizes a cult is leadership. What do you mean by leadership? It means a state where there is one leader, typically very charismatic, that everyone follows blindly. It's clear to everyone, clear, that the situation here is not like that. Unlike other places where they take control of every area in life, to the level of finances and, I don't know, sexual matters, other things. Here, it's not the situation.
A leader that tells people what to do in their homes, what not to do, how to do everything, every decision they have to take, they come and ask, and he decides for every person in their his cult.
Rav also, he objects to anyone trying to make him into, like he says, you know, my chassids, we're not going to have a Hasidic movement here, and all those things. That's exactly it. In the Hasidic movement, there's a custom of leftovers. That at the end of the meal, it's a great honor to eat the leftovers from the Rav's plate. This is in Hasidic movements. It's not in some godforsaken village. It's in the Hasidic movement. It's a great honor to eat leftovers from the Rav's plate. And this is an example where here, everyone here sees it differently. Why is this important? Why do we bring it before you? First of all, so you will know it. Number two, once you know it, pay attention to what people think about you. And see how from, you know, in advance, you can come and disarm this approach. Because each one of us, towards his external environment, he is the wisdom of Kabbalah. He is Bnei Baruch. He is, if you like it or not, a student of Rav Lightman. He's the product of the Torah, of the ideology of Rav Lightman. Towards all the people on the outside, think of the responsibility each one of us is carrying. It's not... but externally, each one of us is a mirror for what's happening here.
Yeah, one more quality that exists in a cult is secrecy. And I would like to see any organization in the world that publishes and broadcasts everything that happens. And if something secret is going on here, I'd like you to tell me, because that's always interesting. But we have 3 hours of lesson in the morning. Rav shoots videos in the studio all the time. You can see it real time. All these lessons, evenings on Saturday, all the time. When do we have time for secrecy, if there was any secrecy?
Something else is disconnection from the family, also missionary work, meaning dissemination.
Wait, don't skip there. Disconnecting from the family, that's something maybe people misunderstand our path. And then accordingly, they take an extreme line and they say, I don't want to talk to my family because they object or all kinds of things. But, and I don't remember, and I've been here a few years, and I think some people have been for a few years. I don't remember anyone who was told, disconnect from your family. We usually say the opposite. If you have some free time, so invest it in your family. It's the opposite of disconnection.
Another topic is ceremoniousness. So there are two main things that people relate to us. And I heard, by the way, all the complaints about it. The first thing is that when we sing at the beginning of the lesson, we're holding hands, you know, this thing. This is a ceremony. It's a cultish ceremony. And the second ceremony is the l'chaim that we raise. These are the two rituals that people say these are, you know, is in a cult, this is what people do.
L'chaim chanoch.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because in the testimony, Talman gave testimony.
Pen,
No, not Pan, not Pan, Man. The wife of Mendelbaum. Sorry, I don't know why I said Ben Moshe now. Tal Mendelbaum. And they asked her if she was ever given a l'chaim in the meal. And she said, yeah, I was given a l'chaim after a project I had, that I did. Because as a woman, she's given less. And Chanoch here, how many times he was given l'chaim in a meal? She says, I don't know if he was given l'chaim once.
L'chaim. L'chaim Chanoch.
Here we should conclude, right, Senka? That's a point of... Okay, two last things. The division between us and the rest of the world. That's true, we serve the rest of the world. We're not proud about it. On the opposite, we know how much responsibility we have and hierarchy. I don't think there's any organization that is more equal than us. We're all divided into tens. We do the spiritual work together. We're all equal. Of course, in the dissemination factory, there is hierarchy. There is a CEO. There are heads of departments, but there's no organization without such an hierarchy. But we're not talking about our spiritual development. And because our time is up, we wanted to have one more workshop question, but we don't have time, so next. Last thing is what the Kabbalists get, the profit they get, the reward they get when people despise them. And we hear from Rav that many times it's a big reward, it's a privilege to be despised. That's one of the one way to advance. The manner of honor is something that stops the body, and to that extent it harms the soul. That's why all the righteous that were famed and had honor, it's like a punishment for them. But the great righteous want them not to lose by becoming published that they are righteous. So that's how the Creator guards them, not to get this honor. So their soul will not be harmed. That's why, just as they have honor on the one hand, they have contempt from the other. That's why we'd like to actually thank all the ones who oppose us. Because of them, we don't diverge from the path. We really want to thank all the Kabbalists and our giant Rav, who teaches us how to correctly relate to every step, every stage we see that exists both in and out of us. Maybe it's a sign for us to reach extra connection, more unity between us, and to break through a path for them to really resist us. Thank you all, friends.
La 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 la